Have melted, covering the earth with water. Those who survived have adapted to a new world. Welcome to Ribbon of Memes, episode 180, a podcast where we interrogate films previously described by other semi-aquatic creatures as
the worst film ever, let's face it.
That's true. This has not been, well,
it's not even the only one.
There has been some, I don't know, revisionism about it, but we are, this is a slight gap, a bridging a gap between our apocalyptic films and our This Was the Worst Film Ever films that we're going to do a few of. And Waterworld from 90, oh sorry, I am Nick, and I am joined as ever by Roger.
Hello.
I am the sexy submariner of the podcast.
I guess I'm a guy with way too much hair who's apparently found a tanker full of hair product.
We are discussing the legendarily awful 1995 Waterworld, directed by Kevin Reynolds / Kevin Costner. We may get into that later. I don't know if Moist Max might be the best way to describe it.
It does appear to have been described as Wet Max by basically the entire Hollywood community.
This is it's a post-apocalyptic film. The concept is that the water levels have risen by nearly 8,000 metres, which is quite a lot for planet Earth. That's more water than is on planet Earth.
I think that's about three times the total water volume of on Earth, including the ice caps.
So I don't know if, I mean, the polar ice caps have melted, is mentioned in this. In my, to get through, this was the first of my, that doesn't quite make sense, of which I finally gave up thinking about with Waterworld. But in my head, while I was still trying to make sense of it, I decided a giant ice asteroid had hit the planet and dumped a load of extra water, and the impact had heated up the planet to the point where it melted the ice caps. That is already more thought given to it than anyone involved in the film gave, I suspect.
Now, I should say, to be fair, that the version I watched, at least, was the original release. There is a director's cut which apparently has more explanation. The theatrical version essentially has no explanation. Nobody really seems to care how they got to where they are or where they're going or what they're going to do after eating supper tonight.
Well, that, the cut is called the Ulysses cut, I believe, because he's named the mariner is called Ulysses in it. The whole movie is a vehicle. Someone, it feels like, had a concept of what about Mad Max, but they're jet skis. And the whole film is basically designed around that idea.
Yeah, there are some very specific points which I think can only be explained by that thinking. We'll come back to that later. But so this is, I think Vanity Project is putting it a bit strong, but there is that thing we see sometimes in Hollywood. You know, somebody has been an actor, he's had two or three really big successes, he's got a fair bit of money, and obviously it's Hollywood, there are lots of people who want to help him spend that money.
Yes.
And to be fair, some actors genuinely do have a talent for directing or producing, and sometimes this works quite well. And sometimes it doesn't, because, you know, not every project is going to be a great one, even if one individual person on it is great.
Well, also, we have that phenomenon of sometimes someone does something really well and then is given absolute free rein to do whatever they like.
Mm-hmm.
And without restrictions, it turns out their vision is not quite the same as everyone else. And then the studio loses confidence halfway through their project.
Then they make them make Mars Needs Moms or something as yes. Penance. This is one of the reasons I always look out when I'm looking for weird films for writer, director, star, all the same person. Because at that point, nobody can say, Bob, this is just stupid.
Well, I think this wasn't quite the case here, but Kevin Costner certainly had a heavy influence on this film to the point where I think Kevin Reynolds actually quit the film by the end, and but still got full directorial credit. So I think he quit a few weeks after it, before the film ended and Kevin Costner stepped into his shoes. Joss Whedon, now much maligned, of course, but came in at the end to do some script work, and described it as 7 weeks of hell, where he was basically just writing down things that Kevin Costner told him to say. So it was a troubled production, and the studio did lose confidence towards the end. Steven Spielberg probably wisely advised them not to film on open water. They filmed on open water.
It is one of the classic things that can eat a budget like nobody's business, because you know, the sea is not your friend. So.
The sea cares not for your cameras and props. And that was hard enough when it was one little ship and a rubbish rubber shark. And it became... Well, I think most of it was filmed in a big tank, to be honest. But anyway, should we talk about the plot of the film while we're
here? Not that there's a lot to say about the plot. I mean, yes, all right, it does sort of hang together, but a lot of it is simply an excuse to hang the action sequences on.
I mean, this is a big budget film, and it's...
The most expensive film ever made at the time. That is, I think, one of the reasons we'll come back to for why it was universally panned at the time. But,
well, people like to kind of get in on the act of, oh, this is going to be a disaster.
Well, all right, I think this is a much thing we can mention now. There is definitely a dogpiling effect you can get in the Hollywood press, and we'll see that again with another film we'll talk about next time, that... It, particularly when a film is very much attached to a particular person who is a name, and in this case it's obvious, everybody knew, all right, Costner's not officially the director, but he is clearly the guy whose film this is, and the press want to take that guy down a peg, then they will find every little thing about this is a troubled production, this is going to be a terrible film, and so on. And there is always stuff to indicate that in the best film in the world, that you can find people to say, I had a terrible time, and so on. Yes. And so there was a lot of that, and by the time it actually came out, there had been so much negative press that people were primed for something that's going to be a bit rubbish.
Well, I mean, that has, in defence of other films that's happened to, Jaws, for instance, was widely considered it was going to be a total disaster. But when it came out, people were like, oh, it's actually quite good. Similarly, and Steven Spielberg was kind of the guy, the wunderkind who they were going to take down a peg. I had another film in mind, but it's completely slipped my memory. But there are... Titanic. These films were widely thought to... I mean, I'm not going to say wonderful things about Titanic, but it was not a box office disaster, far from it. Films can rise above such things.
Well, I think we'll come back to this, I suspect, but the problem is that on the one hand, you've got most expensive film ever made, huge expectations, this ought to be amazing. And on the other hand, you've got a plot that frankly doesn't support that level of amazingness.
Well, yeah, we open with a frankly ridiculous amount of water on the planet, and then we have the opening of the mariner on his trimaran. I like I've always been fascinated by trimarans since... I read about the story of Donald Crowhurst and his round the world race that went disastrously wrong. For those who don't know, a good starting point, I'd recommend the documentary Deep Water, which is way better than this film. and is absolutely fascinating about the folly of humanity and the fragileness of the mental condition. But anyway, trimaran, it's very pretty. The mariner lives in one. We catch him recycling his own urine in a contraption.
And this was the first point at which I said, hang on a minute.
Yes.
Because, yeah, all right, this is not a formal corner, but yeah, we are both competent biologists. Urine is the body's waste product. It is very, very salty water, plus everything your body didn't want and could get rid of, other than the bulk food which comes out the other hole. Anything that can make urine into drinkable water can make seawater into drinkable water, because urine is fundamentally not that different from seawater except for the extra crap in it.
I I think they do, I can't quite remember. I think at some point they do say something like, the filters can't handle seawater. I agree. I don't know. Surely you just have to clean the salt out every so often. I mean, they seem to cope with a lot of other things like that. But
and obviously you cannot produce more volume of water to drink than you pissed out.
Exactly. That is the fundamental problem. There are things called essential losses.
You're going to be sweating. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't. It just doesn't work. It may prolong your life if that were. But you are surrounded by a ton of water that, yes, you could. You may need to do like a pre-filter and then put it through. Anyway, if they've got the technology to filter urine into some water, yes, I agree. That was this. Yes, that was another one where I'm like, but as with everything in Waterworld, you know, if you catch the submariner picking up a bucket of water and pouring it into the thing, that is a less kind of dramatic opening than in peeing in a bucket and drinking it. You know, it's all about the kind of the vibes and the visual effects, which I know a lot of films are. Mad Max is. Perhaps we're being mean because we never kind of pushed Mad Max on its realism.
We did.
I suppose we did. It's just less immediately.
But Mad Max can plausibly say, you know, lots of people have died in the bombs or whatever. See our previous episode in post-apocalyptic films. But, you know, it's not entirely implausible that you should find an oil refinery, a Leather and Spikes costume warehouse. That sort of thing.
That's the one I struggle with. I don't know why everyone is just like a gimp in Mad Max. But I like it. It's a good aesthetic. Yes.
Well, I'd like to talk about that wind turbine, because this is Roger's wind turbine corner. And I've got to say, this is a love. Visually speaking, I think they made the absolutely best choice.
Yes.
Because it is a beautiful thing, and that spiralling blade pattern looks good when you look at it.
As opposed to solar panels or whatever, yes. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, specifically, there are lots of wind turbine designs. This is a Darius turbine, patented 1926.
Right.
Its biggest advantage is completely irrelevant here, because its biggest advantage is you don't have to turn it to face the wind. So you put it on the top of a building or whatever, the wind comes from any direction, you still get power.
Okay,
but
you're
on
a boat,
ship that
is always...
you have to anchor it or it'll just drift downwind anyway. And if you anchor it, it's going to hang off that anchor, pointing towards the anchor, which is
upwind. It will naturally, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Currents make a difference. Anyway, it's... It has some problems. It needs really good materials tech, which they don't have, because the torque varies over the rotation. Basically, it goes from full thrust at one point of the rotation to zero to slightly negative. And so there's a constant vibrational stress on the bearing arms, and most of the mass is out on the blades, so you've got all the spinning load as well. It needs good tech, which, frankly, they don't have.
No.
It has one big advantage, which is the gearbox is at the bottom of the mast where you can get at it. But anyway, this is absolutely style over substance.
Well, yeah, it's pretty, isn't it? And that's what I don't normally mind a few inconsistencies, but you've got to have something to hold on to. Anyway, Kevin Costner's this stoic. Taciturn, perhaps is a better way of putting it. A guy who's been surviving on his own. He's got some plant that he's dug up from somewhere. The most precious commodity in this world is soil. Fertile soil, I guess, though where you're supposed to plant it, I don't know. But there he has a little plant pot. And he gets robbed. I have a problem. I don't especially enjoy watching, and it's just personal taste, I think, a bit like I had with Steve McQueen in a way. I don't particularly enjoy watching Kevin Costner. I don't find him terribly interesting to watch. I find his voice a little entirely unfair, but he just sounds a little whiny even when he's trying to be cool, kind of strontium dog-like. There's a bit of a mismatch with the hero. So I'll accept that's personal choice. I did like Dances with Wolves. I have some issues with it now, of course. He's got a moustache in that, so it covers it off his face. I don't know what it is, but I don't particularly get on with Kevin Costner. I don't dislike him especially. It doesn't gel for me.
He is not in itself a reason to see this film for you.
No. Not for me. Anyway, he gets robbed by a fellow sailor.
Supposedly there is some sort of code of honour thing, but nobody seems to worry too much about that.
No, it's never really mentioned again particularly, but he's... I don't know if we're supposed to get a measure of the mariner at this point, whether he's supposed to be honourable. I don't know quite... He just tends to be... He's just quite annoyed that he's had his stuff stolen, so I don't think he's particularly honourable himself.
Also, he's got... So, this is... Have you ever been aboard a trimaran?
Only a moored trimaran.
Right, so you have some idea of what the below-deck space is like.
Yes.
The ones I've met are, frankly, tiny, because the whole point of the triple hull is you have three narrow blades that cut through the water.
Yes, there is not a lot of room to do very much.
In this boat, there's a lot of room.
It's very much a TARDIS trimaran in that it's bigger in the inside. Unless there's a huge bulbous blob at the bottom. Anyway, it doesn't matter. but yes, another issue. I can accept that as a bit of a Hollywoodism. Anyway, a chase ensues during which jet ski rascals turn up, which is what the film's been desperate to do all along, is show us cool bikers, Mad Max bikers. They're all, you brought this up off air, they're all dirty and grimy and covered in oil.
Because that's what Mad Max does.
Except they're in a world covered in water. It's not difficult to wash.
Yeah, it's not ideal washing in seawater. You do end up with a load of salt on your skin. So it doesn't feel great, but it's probably better than being dirty.
But exactly, once again, it is, as you say, Mad Max people are all covered in oil and grit, but that's because they're all dealing with oils and engines and everything all the time. Anyway.
I should say, the writer Peter Rader, the initial idea for this, he came up in a conversation with Brad Trevoy, and they basically said, we should make a Mad Max ripoff. It was explicitly flat from the beginning.
Yes, it was very specific, a Mad Max ripoff. I did wonder as well, again, this isn't the film's fault. I do wonder, I'd be fascinated to read, because I was thinking about this during the film, because I found it more interesting in the film. How a planet entirely covered in water, how does that affect the water cycle and rain and storms and things? We never see any of that because it's all just placid water and sunny. But it got me wondering what kind of weather patterns you would have on a planet that was entirely water world.
Well, I can say one thing up front, which is the thing that stops storm systems and waves from simply circling the planet and gaining strength forever is called land.
Right. Well, that would have been cool, wouldn't it? They could have had, like, a megastorm. That would have been a great thing to have in. This storm's been there for 100 years, and it keeps going round, and that would have been a cool thing. No, anyway, doesn't matter.
Instead, we're going to go to Bartertown.
We go to Bartertown. Oh, sorry, it's not Bartertown. It's a big floating pontoon of...
They call it an atoll for no obvious reason.
Yeah, it's not an atoll. It's basically a load of ships tied together. It's a big floating community. With a wall. And Mariner turns up, and he's got some stuff to trade. He's got some soil. He's very happy with his soil.
Here is a thing which I suspect may have been caused by editing, but one person says, oh, he's been away 15 months. Somebody else, the cop, treats him like a complete stranger. Do they know him here or not?
I missed that. I assumed he was a complete stranger. I missed the 15. Well, there you go. A little inconsistency there. This is after we've seen that the mariner marines hard. He's very good at marining. He does proper sailing and stuff and spins. I mean, things about trimaran, they are very fast. Mm-hmm. They're a bit fragile. They're also great at not capsizing. The problem with the trimaran is if they do capsize, you're fucked because it's very hard to uncapsize it. Anyway, he arrives at Bartertown, whatever it's called, the atoll, and there's kind of people drinking, but it's basically, I mean, it's easy to call it, it is a town out of Mad Max, and there's very little thought given to, this
complete
is...
Complete with the tanks of pig shit, except they don't have the pigs.
Exactly, there's so little thought gone into, how do these people actually live? It's all about... Well, how does it look like in Mad Max? Or do that on a boat. And so there's a load of fascinating stuff, like the storms that you just made. You know, that idea was great. Just how do these people drink? Where do they get their food from? How does it work? But there's not really any indication of that, or I didn't pick up any.
I got the impression that the tanks of sludge that we see in the film primarily as a method of execution are some sort of effectively protein vat.
Right.
How
so then are they going
to
eat him afterwards? I don't know. I was just disappointed that there's no... It's all about this is what Mad Max would do on a boat. Even though that doesn't make any sense. And that basically is my summary of the film. But, okay, so while he's there, I've forgotten how it comes out. Does he get splashed in the face with water, or does someone look behind his ears or something?
Somebody spots his gills, because he has gills.
He has gills. He has gills
behind
his ears.
Well, first of all, he pisses off the locals by refusing to sleep with their daughter.
Yes, yes. Yes, he does, because he's a taciturn mariner man. Someone fondles his ear or looks behind his ear, and he's got gills behind his ears. I mean, I don't know if anyone in the film... Gills don't work like that. I mean, for that to work, the water would have to come out of his ears, I think. I mean, basically, for gills to work, you need water to be constantly flowing over the gills to mm-hmm. extract the oxygen from them. So
there's
the logical place...
gills don't do. We'll come back to that later.
Well, the logical place to have that. Well, also, where's his salt gland? Is he anyway? Let's start, because this is salty water. How does his bladder work? It doesn't anyway. The logical place to have gills.
I believe there are some mollusks which can manage both salt and freshwater adaptation.
They are,
so
but
maybe
they
he has
don't
some
have
mollusk DNA spliced in.
Well, they don't have kidneys anyway.
Oh, but some of them have huge kidneys specifically for this purpose.
Well, they kind of all kidney. I had to read a fucking paper on the renal physiology of bivalve mollusks for my exam. So anyway, let's not go into that. Anyway, the logical place for gills, honestly, is where everyone else puts them, which is in your neck. Even then, you have to constantly be swallowing water, and water has to be flowing out of the gills. I don't know how... You'd have to, pump... The problem with them being in his ears, it's kind of against the flow of water, which is down the body. So he'd have to somehow pump the... I don't know why I'm overthinking this, but again... The reason they're behind the ears is because he basically looks normal. So for plot reasons, it's only when someone looks at his ears that they see
him. I suppose you could have a profoundly enlarged eustachian tube and use that.
But then... that would affect the way he spoke. That would affect the way mucus moves around. It would all come out of his eyes all the time. He'd cry out of the back of his ears. Anyway... again, overthinking it, but it's just another thing that, let's put him behind his ears for plot reasons.
Mm.
I mean, they could be there, but they wouldn't work very well. But clearly these gills do work because he can breathe underwater anyway.
But anyway, this shows he is clearly a mutant, so let us lock him up and plan to execute him later.
Why do we have mutants? Because Mad Max has mutant people, that's why. There's been no radiation incident, I don't know what. Maybe solar radiation is affecting everyone because they're all in the sun all the time. I don't know.
You're 25,000 feet higher in the atmosphere.
I was wondering about that, but I think I looked into it. You're not actually... Because what happens is the atmosphere gets pushed out, doesn't it?
Yeah, so it would be slightly thinner because you've got the same volume of gas covering a larger surface area, but not
right,
much.
Right, okay. But basically, you're still at... water, at ground level or whatever. Okay, anyway, it's not difficult to breathe where they are. Anyway, they decide to execute him because he's a mutant and they don't like mutants, so they apparently are a common thing, or at least a thing everyone knows about.
Apparently.
I mean, mutations happen, I know, and, there is... I've always been interested... Sorry, I keep going on. So I've always been interested in the aquatic ape theory, which doesn't... I know it's widely discredited now, but we do have noses that are shaped... very unlike the other great apes that are shaped to sort of push water away. We're often born with webbed fingers and toes. We have a vagal reflex when our face hits water, it slows our heart. That's not something the other great apes have. Mm. Anyway, doesn't matter. I'm just interested at the aquatic ape. We've got no hair.
I would note that he could have solved all this problem by sleeping with a girl in the first place. I mean, okay, it's implied that she wasn't entirely happy about this, but... Probably there wouldn't have been any offspring, and he'd have been safely away before they noticed.
Oh, that's right. They want his sperm, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe she would have picked up that he was a mutant. I don't know. I don't know how passionate their lovemaking would have been, but it was not to be, unfortunately. They go to dunk him in pig shit, and then there is an attack by Dennis Hopper being Dennis Hopper.
Now, I would say two things here. One, yes, this is Dennis Hopper doing the standard Dennis Hopper thing he does.
Yes.
And, you know, either you like it or you don't. But I choose to see this as he knows what a piece of crap this film is. And he's going to have all the fun he can.
Yes.
He has heard of restraint. He left it in the trailer.
He didn't leave his drugs in the trailer. Sorry, that's slanderous, and I take that back. But notoriously enjoyed a tipple, did Dennis Hopper. He is... he's the kind of definition of scenery chewing here. He's the polar opposite of Kevin, which I guess is the point. Kevin Costner's kind of taciturn, manly fish guy, fishy man guy, I don't know. Anyway, Dennis Hopper's the kind of, yeah, I know this is a B-movie, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with a B-movie. There's nothing wrong with a big-budget B-movie. Some of my favourite films are big-budget B-movies.
Well, that's the thing. Everybody except the leads is in a B-movie with a rubbish plot. And yes, that could have been great fun if it weren't so hugely expensive. But I think again, this is part of why it was regarded as a disappointment, because it was, you know, it had to be touted because it was so expensive as the best thing ever. And you know, if I'd gone into this on a third run thinking, I feel like an entertaining piece of crap in the afternoon, I might have been quite happy. If I'd gone into it thinking this is the great thing ever, I must see it straight away, I would be very disappointed.
Yes. But these are, again, these may... Yes, I totally agree. It's built up too much. But the reason Dennis Hopper is crazy Dennis Hopper, as well as him just enduring, is because that's what the Mad Max villains are like. Mm. They are crazy, eccentric, nuts guys. And that's why...
And they must have physical disability.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't, to start with, to be fair. But he loses an eye in the attack. This is also why Kevin Costner's personality is... Because that's Mad Max, isn't it? Without the guilt. It's so lazy. Anyway, during the fracas, the mariner escapes from his pig shit hell. And there's a guy who has an airship, a Zeppelin, who...
This is the emergency escape route for two people in Bartertown, basically.
Yes. So he gets on it. He's going to take his... friend, is she his daughter? I think she's his friend. The love interest of the film, who is
Helen.
Played Ellen. Helen, sorry, played by Jean Triplehorn.
Jean Triplehorn, at this point in her career, is quite early. She's been the victim in Basic Instinct, but that's the only big thing she's been in so far.
And she, I feel like she's pretty good in there. Well, we can talk about it later because she becomes she and her little child, because there's got to be a kind of feral kid, because Mad Max has a feral kid, so there's a kid here. It's less feral in this one, but it is a grubby kind of kid. They try and get on the Zeppelin. They fail to get on the Zeppelin. Their other option is to get on the trimaran with the mariner, who is having himself away, while the rest of the atoll is, it's basically blown up. You would... Do they mean to blow up the atoll? I would have thought they'd be better just raiding it repeatedly, but...
It's strongly suggested that they are systematically destroying all of the atolls.
That seems like a bad idea to me.
Yeah.
If you're raided. But okay, fair enough. But then you don't get massive explosions and things.
And then in the next bit, I wrote two sentences. One, you have a plane just fly over out of spear-throwing range and drop firebombs on them until they have to surrender or burn. But no, they don't do that. And
no.
Then I wrote down, what did you think was going to happen when you harpooned the plane?
It's a good point. It's a good point. I mean, the action sequences are quite fun. I think they're very pretty. They're very competent.
And this is 95. You can't, even for touch-up CGI isn't really available yet. You have to actually make things happen.
Yeah. So as far as the kind of, you know, we like, I've forgotten the Mad Max director's name, George Miller. Mm. He's, you know, he's great at, you know, real action. And I think they do it very well here. I'm not invested in any of the characters at this point. I don't give a shit. So it didn't really move me in any way.
I would like to mention, by the way, the other noted bad guy, who is apparently called the Nord, though I don't remember the name actually being spoken in the film.
This is the big hair guy.
This is Gerard Murphy, who is apparently quite a respected Irish actor. Like Dennis Hopper, has clearly worked out what sort of film this is, and he's not going to be subtle at all.
No, he's they're pantomime villains. There's no attempt at any pathos or any indication of where they came from, which is fair enough. It's not their kind of film. I don't mind that. But, you know why they're like that? It's because Mad Max does that. But there we go. They escape the burning, sinking, destroyed atoll on the Trimaran.
And then there are some character moments.
We have this kind of... I think it is... We're supposed to... The Mariner's, like, deliberately shown to be an asshole. Like, physical abuse. But he doesn't do sexual abuse. He's not that kind of a baddie. He just beats them up. It worked for me because I already don't like Kevin Costner, and then when he's shown to be an asshole, I'm quite happy to go along with it. He attempts to drown them or throw them off the ship, but anyway, they're stuck with him, he's stuck with them. Well, he's not stuck. But I just know this one, oh, it's going to turn out he has a heart of gold. You know why? Because Mad Max does in the end, so there we go. let's just skip to the end of this bit.
And also, when he's being played by the guy who's largely financing and controlling the production, they don't have enough confidence in themselves to make them, to play an honest villain role.
Yes.
They want to look good.
I mean, be careful what you wish for, because we had, what's the sad punchy man film? the one about Jake LaMotta, which I absolutely hated, so...
Raging Bull.
It's a very well-done film about someone I have no interest in spending any time with.
That's not with De Niro in charge of the production, though.
That's fair enough. Yes, good point, yes. But, okay, so we have lots of... I just found that this all a bit tedious, because you know exactly where it's going. They're going to end up in love. He's going to end up happy. There's some suggestion that they were chasing this kid because she has a rumoured map to dry land. I can't remember in Mad Max. There is some kind of mythical place they're all trying to get to in Mad Max. I'm assuming they pinched it off Mad Max, because they pinched everything.
Well, certainly in Mad Max. As we say, this was first mooted. I think the first draft of the script was 86. And so that is after...
Road Warrior.
No, the third one.
Yes. Beyond Thunderdome.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
That definitely has the... We are trekking across country to find the good place.
Yes, yeah. And then they're attacked by the plane again, piloted by Jack Black, I was surprised to see, but as you see, almost nothing of the pilot, and he's absolutely covered in clothing. You have no idea who he is. I don't think he was anyone at that time. But then the plane again. The plane gets attached to the mast of the Trimaran. Now, I know Trimarans are stable. Are they stable enough to hold the weight of a plane as it swings round the mast? I don't know. Maybe they are.
A lot of it would depend on what the pilot was doing.
Yes, I suppose. I would have thought even if the Trimaran didn't go over, the mast would snap, though.
Very likely,
Anyway, doesn't matter.
I mean, it does have to be a bit load-bearing, because it's the wind generator as well, so...
Yes, true. There's a plane attack. It's interestingly done, and then...
But again, it's the Mad Max thing of, this would be a piddly little Cessna or whatever back in the old world. Now it is the one flying thing we got, so it is a terrifying weapon.
Yes, exactly, yeah. I mean, it's nicely done. They find some trap there's a floating guy and it's a trap, isn't there? And then they're trying to get...
We have the cutaway to the raiders first.
Yes, I'm struggling with the plot here, because it just all blends together, because it all looks visually similar, and I wasn't that invested. But yes,
there isn't really a sense of development, as far as I was concerned. It's... Yeah, we are chasing him, you are chasing us, whatever.
Yeah.
So the Raiders are based aboard the Exxon Valdez, which I assume was chosen because that would be a name familiar to the audience. The big oil spill was in 89. This is in 95. In the real world, she had already been renamed twice by the time this film came out, but, you know, who cares? That's fair enough.
the least of the crimes against reality.
And they have, essentially, they have a tanker full of oil, and that is their industrial base.
Mm.
Now, I do have this is not exactly Roger's oil corner, but what we see looks very much like black goop. In other words, crude oil.
Okay.
Which you cannot simply put into a jet ski and expect it to burn.
It's also not super flammable, is it?
Yeah. You can make it go up, but it's hard work to get it started. If it were petrol, then it would go up the way we see it go up. But also, the guy on the raft would be dead from the fumes. So,
okay.
Perhaps they have some refinery machinery to keep the jet skis fueled or something.
I guess it's just a cool idea. It looks cool. It's like the Mad Max, they have big trucks, don't they? So let's have a big oil tanker.
Mm-hmm. So let's see. There is an ambush. Yeah, there is a. I can't remember what they call it. A sort of mini outpost thing.
It's like a little, a little one-stop shop. It's just one guy who just sits there waiting for people to come by.
And he has been murdered and wired up to look as if he's waving. Meanwhile, there are a bunch of jet skis underwater, hidden.
Yeah,
which
that looks
would
cool.
Work better if you could actually start the engine of a jet ski while it was underwater.
I assumed they'd thought at least that far through, but no. Okay, all right.
The sequence is getting away from me too. But at some point, the women folk get captured.
He gets a chance to be a nice guy because they meet. This is the one I was mixing up. They meet a guy in a shop and he wants to buy some, I don't know, matches or something. I've forgotten. And he comes on board because he wants some time with the woman folk. And then the mariner gets to show, oh no, actually I'm kind and I'm not going to let you have the woman folk or something like that. So he gets to show that he's a nice guy. Anyway, yes, the women folk get captured.
Well, hang on, I think it's before they get captured because we have the diving scene. All right. Roger's scuba corner. There's a bit that basically he wants to show her what is below the surface.
Because it's hundreds of years after whatever incident happened. So no one actually remembers that there was a civilization before. Or she doesn't, anyway.
I think a lot of it is also that simply any sort of record has largely been lost in the scrabble for survival, so...
Yeah, fair enough, yep.
But so he has a diving bell for reasons, and...
Yeah, because he can breathe underwater.
And rigs it up so that he can take her down and show her what is below the surface. Now... There is a thing about diving bells. It is basically a open at the bottom container. You catch the air in it. As you descend, the water pressure increases, so the water creeps further up the bell and the air gets compressed. That's fine.
There's a maximum depth, because sooner or later it will fill up with water. Or
well, it's asymptotic, but yeah, sooner or later you won't have any room to breathe. Also, you won't have any breathing volume. But when we see it in the depths,
it's got the same volume of water.
It's about two or three atmospheres, which is maybe 50 feet.
Well, but it's implied he's gone down a lot. I don't know how deep. They basically are swimming over Denver, apparently.
Yeah, so if we have 25,000 feet of sea level rise, which is the number that was talked about, apparently in the director's cut, Denver is about 8,000 feet up, so that's... 17,000 feet down that they've gone.
And Denver's one of the highest cities in the world, or at least in America, famously. So, yes, one, the water level doesn't rise. Two, the strength required to pull that volume of air below the surface and pull it down and down and down as pressure increases. You would have to be a fucking whale to do that. But
well, generally what you do is weight them. So they have neutral buoyancy on the surface. As you descend, you lose buoyancy because the air's getting compressed, so you dump the ballast. the thing that's hard about this is not ascending explosively when you start to ascend.
Okay, of course they don't think of that either. It makes absolutely no sense. It's not how water works. It's just... oh. Anyway, he goes down. She's like, oh, well, I had no idea. Look at that. It's pretty. But the whole point is to have a cool underwater sequence. Problem is, despite all the high budget, it's very dark and grim, which is correct. But you can't really see very much.
It should actually be even darker, of course.
It should, but yeah, so they make it lighter than it. But even so, it doesn't look very impressive because it is very deeply underwater.
The only actual plot significance to all this is there's been this whole thing about where did you get the soil from? You must have found dry land. And the answer is no, I took it off the bottom here because I am super diver.
Yeah, I'm swimming man, so I can get all the... And this is where he gets all his complicated tech as well that he's got on board, that even though, I don't know, that salt water and tech are not good bedfellows generally. Anyway, doesn't matter. That sequence is literally the point where I'm just going to give up worrying about the science of this because it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. It's just for a cool sequence. Anyway, when they come back up, the women folk get taken. He's fallen in love with them or made friends. He likes the kid a bit. Haven't talked much about the kid's acting because
it's not offensively bad. I mean, honestly,
no,
that's about all
it wasn't
I
great either. I wasn't warm to it. Jean Triplehorn is fine. She's very good. I mean, she does
I mean
what
as
she
far
has
as kids
do.
Go, there's Newt. And then there are
yes,
other,
exactly.
other
and then
child
there
actors.
And there's everyone else. She is fine. Her job is to be angry with Kevin Costner and then somehow fall in love with him, even though he's an asshole. but
he is the only man in this film who has washed in the last 5 years.
Yes, he's the one who can go into the water. Anyway, so then Kevin Costner meets the Zeppelin guy. He turns out has got a whole raft of survivors with it. Well, not raft, whatever you call it on a Zeppelin.
Gondola,
there we go. He's got a gondola full of survivors from the atoll, including the mayor or the captain of the atoll or whatever. And they decide they need the girl back because she's got the map tattooed on her back to dry land, which it turns out, oh, we don't know that yet. But
everybody believes that that is what she has.
Yes.
Which is frankly more important than the reality.
Yes, yeah. So they go to the Exxon Valdez to get her back. And they do. I mean, I haven't got a lot of enthusiasm to go.
So somewhere in here, there's a bit where Helen is in the water and the mariner has to breathe for her because they're hiding underwater from the bad guys, I think. And so he uses his gills to provide air for her to breathe. And again, gills do not work like that.
That's not... It doesn't literally put air in your lungs. I don't...
Maybe
his gills work like that. Anyway, he's all right because he's got oxygenated blood. She dies because he puts loads of water into her mouth. But anyway, that's not what happens.
This is the final big action sequence. Here is a one-man army taking out an oil tanker full of raiders.
And we know, you know, it's going to end up with the Exxon Valdez exploding and Dennis Hopper like scream, maybe because it was in the trailer, I don't know. But anyway, that is exactly what happens. He's jumping away from the exploding Exxon Valdez in a jet ski as it explodes behind him. I think I don't remember. I mean, I
have no recollection of this, but I've written down it's 1995. The kids like bungee jumping, right?
Okay, there is some.
I think that may have been off the Zeppelin.
Oh yeah, there is some. Oh, anyway, Dennis Hopper's. There are zero surprises in what happens.
The one surprise: there are monsters in the sea.
Oh, I'd forgotten about the monsters that I mentioned just once,
and only the mariner knows about them. You would think all these people living in fragile containers on the water would be aware of that. This is the thing that impacts your survival. It's quite important.
Yes, but no one else knows that the water is dangerous, even though they've spent their whole lives next to it. Only he knows how to calm the thing down What does he do? Does he sing to it? Does he bap it on the nose? I can't remember. It's a big water monster. Don't know why, but it's there. Same thing that mutated his ears, probably. Maybe there was some mutagen released. We'll go with that. Some mutagen occurred and it created monsters.
Maybe daddy was a fish, you know, I mean, at this point.
It's all gone a bit Lovecraftian, isn't it? Maybe it's Dagon under there. Anyway, yes, there are giant monsters. Does that become relevant?
I don't think so. I don't think they use the monsters to take out the tanker or anything like that. They just set fire to it, mostly.
Yeah, you don't even need them at the end. Oh, I think, yeah, she gets... They're all surrounding her, and I think the Mariner bungee jumps down and grabs her and pulls her up to the Zeppelin.
And then there's a great big jet ski explosion below, yeah.
Yes, yeah. And then they decipher the map on the kid's back. Did we ever understand why the kid's got a tattoo of the dry land on it?
I think the implication was that her parents' brackets dying... were casting her loose to try to survive somewhere else and put that there so that she could find her way back later or something along those lines.
Yeah, but if it's that great, why... Anyway, they work out...
But also... Yeah, okay, so... sorry, but I'm getting a lot of corners here. Roger's geospatial navigation corner. It is explicitly stated... that what is on her back is not a map of things to follow, which is fair enough. There isn't anything fixed to follow, but a set of latitude and longitude coordinates
reversed for some reason
because the magnetic pole is inverted or something. Yeah, let's not worry about that. But it does occur to me that there is, as far as these people are concerned, no fixed point. If they had a really accurate clock, they could get a latitude long from star sighting. But they show no sign of having that. So, you know, there is no latitude or longitude standard.
Well, but the guy seems to know immediately what it is and where that means, even though there's no... It wouldn't even be that... I would have liked to see some kind of... You know, Moana does this better when it shows, you know, how people fix a bearing with the stars, even without accurate... It would have been cool to see that sort of stuff. But no, but you would have thought... They don't even know there's a civilization down there, but they remember what latitude and longitude are and what that means. Anyway, it's fucking nonsense, the whole thing.
But in the end, they come to an island, which I believe, again, in the director's cut, is explicitly named as the top of Everest.
Yes, that's the only thing left that's there. And it's very nice.
And it's basically green hills and valleys.
Yeah. Again, I didn't put... At this point, I'd already given up thinking about how that might work.
So our small number of survivors decide they will settle there, but the Mariner's going to go on because he's, you know, manly and stuff.
Well, because he's Mad Max, and that's what Mad Max does at the end of Mad Max film. I mean...
That might be a sequel. Thank goodness there's not been a sequel.
I mean, we're pretty down on this film. Is it the worst film ever made? No, clearly it isn't. It's not... appallingly, it's not so bad it's good. It's not Plan 9 from Out of Space, which is, I mean, that genuinely is so awful that it is entertaining, so I don't know whether that elevates it from the worst film ever made or not. But this film is just that commits the most heinous sin of being mediocre, unoriginal. I mean, it's got one original idea, which is Wet Max, as you say, but otherwise there's nothing original. The plot is entirely lifted from Mad Max. The characters are entirely lifted from Mad Max. It's not done as well as Mad Max, and somehow it makes less sense than Mad Max. And when I say Mad Max, I basically mean Mad Max 2, The Road Warrior, which this film is largely...
With a little bit of 3.
With a little bit of 3, yeah. The kind of the barter town and everything.
I think this is the essential problem, that if it had been a forgettable summer film with a low budget... then that would have been fine, but because it was a big expensive thing, people expected big expensive high quality film, and that was even before the cost overruns.
Now, so, do you think it was unfairly maligned? Was it fair to suffer all this kind of, this is the worst film ever, what a disaster kind of
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm not going to say very much positive about it. I probably have already said all the things I'm ever going to say that are positive about it. But I have seen much worse. And I have seen much worse that got an easier pass from the press.
I agree. I think I didn't like the film for partly just, I don't know, our backgrounds are sort of similar. So there's a lot of things that
Here's also a thing which really shows of how much they were following the Mad Max playbook rather than anything else. What is the one thing that you get in every film about being at sea? You get a storm.
Yeah, well, that's
there
what I mean.
There is no storm.
It's all sun all the time because, you know why? Because Mad Max is like that.
Yeah.
I think it's a bad film, but I don't think for any of the reasons that were mooted. I don't think it's, I mean, it's competently acted. It looks really good. The budget shows, but I didn't like it because of its unoriginality. Really, that's mainly it. For a film that seems to be a super original idea, it's really not. Well, it's got that one idea. It doesn't really do anything with it. Was it fair to have been thought of as the worst film ever? No, there have been a lot. I totally agree. There's a lot worse films that have done a lot better. Titanic being one of them, I think. Or at least Titanic is similar in the way that I disliked it for similar kind
One of these
of
days
reasons.
I'm going to have to see it, but I'm in no hurry to do that.
Well, don't you like James Cameron? Just stay in that position where you like James Cameron.
To be fair, at the time, the cinema score rating, which was basically A plus to F, the audiences were giving it a B, which is, yeah, it's not great, but it's not terrible either.
And that doesn't surprise me. You'd sit there and you'd be entertained and you'd come out and think, yeah, that was... Particularly if you haven't seen Mad Max. or even if you have, I guess you're like, oh, well, that was similar. I wish it was Mad Max, but there we go. It's not an awful film by any means. I didn't like it. You didn't like it particularly. It's certainly no masterpiece, even in retrospect.
And there is a thing that some people say about many films, which is you should just turn off your brain and try to enjoy it. And that is not a way that I personally enjoy films. See all these quibbles we've been raising. But I think that if you are that sort of watcher, you could probably enjoy this more than I did.
Well, it's a problem. Somebody, you know, if there's films I'm watching where I don't know very much about a thing, then I'm quite happy, and I don't know very much about a lot of this. It didn't take much, but yeah, you can enjoy things and just, but you shouldn't have to turn your brain. You know, you shouldn't be thinking deeply about these things. You know, we're both happy with kind of fridge logic in a way, aren't we?
We're both happy with Mad Max too.
Exactly, that makes no sense either, but it's really good. There's a lot of films I really like that don't make, but I want some kind of. I want the filmmakers to have put at least as much thought into it as I'm going to put in during the film. And I don't feel like that has happened, let alone after the film. Anyway, there we go. Waterworld. It is not as bad as everyone says. It's still rubbish in different ways.
And probably if you decide as a result of this to watch it, should Niggurath help you, you should probably watch the Ulysses Cut.
Except it's longer.
And I haven't personally seen this, but from the impression I get is that it does at least answer some of the really obvious questions that the cinematic cut raises and doesn't answer.
Well, there we go. Okay, so that's something. It is neither the worst film ever, nor is it the masterpiece. You know, a lot of these films years later then get sort of, actually, this was one of the greatest films of all time, and everyone was, it's not that either. It's just...
Honestly, I think if it hadn't had all that fuss made about it at the time of release, it could well be completely forgotten now.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. And hopefully will be. it's all right. If you want to see Dennis Hopper's worth watching in it, I guess. But you can watch him in Speed instead, and that's a much better film.
So, yeah, and Gerard Murphy is... Again, clearly having fun chewing the scenery.
Yes,
so.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
That is the thing. I mean, I'm assuming that Costner is playing this the way he wants to play it, as the, you know, essentially gruff and tough and not very emotional sort of big strong man.
Mm.
But he doesn't give any impression of having fun with this at all.
No, he looks miserable the whole time. At least, I don't know. Mel Gibson, personal issues with the kind of person he is in reality. At least he has sort of a twinkle in his eye or something, doesn't he? He's a more...
And he doesn't look like every other man on set either.
Yeah, true. Well, there we are, Waterworld. Off to Davy Jones's locker with you, and other nautical terms.
Well, that certainly was a film.